Adam's Archive.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Adam's Archive. My name is Austin Adams, and thank you so much for listening today. On today's episode, we're going to have to cover a lot of ground, starting with the fact that Julian Assange could have his prosecution thrown away, according to Joe Biden. Now we'll talk why I think he might be saying this. Maybe it has something to do with gaining popularity in a time where your dog wouldn't want to vote for him, but that's beside the point. We'll read through that article together and talk through some of the more nuanced conversations surrounding Julian Assange. From there, we're going to discuss somebody of high notoriety within the AI community, what some people call the godfather of AI, warning about battle robots. If that sounds terrifying to you, then we're on the same page. So we'll discuss that. After that, we'll talk about how plants allegedly scream when they're being harvested. That's a terrifying visual. Then we'll jump into the Alex Jones situation. So Alex Jones, if you don't know, had the full force of the FBI, the CIA. They completely obliterated him in court. He over the Sandy Hook, the crazy situation that he had. I think it was $1 billion is what they said that he owed these defendants, which is like the most egregious of all hearings in the history of the American judicial system. So there was some updates on that, which is the fact that there was an individual from the FBI who came out and got caught on camera in one of the, I don't believe this was actually Project Veritas, but it was very Project Veritas-esque in the way that it was a gay man who somebody found on either Grindr or Tinder. And apparently that's the only way that you can find these people who are willing to talk about this type of stuff. But we'll actually watch the video where this man from the FBI comes out and admits that the FBI actually went after Alex Jones to make an example of him. And how, you might ask? Well, we'll talk about that in just a little bit. We'll go through a couple articles about that. Then we'll talk about this new biomedical company that's claiming that they're going to do something that has been shown to not really work out in almost every fiction rendition of this ever, which is the fact that this company is saying it's called Colossal Biosciences. And apparently they're going to de-extinct animals, starting with a mammoth. And if that doesn't terrify you, I don't know what will. So we'll talk about the implications of that. We'll talk a little bit about the company and the people that are behind it, all of that. And then the last discussion we'll have today, and we might have one more, but if we have time, we'll talk about that. If we don't, the last thing we're going to talk about is the solar eclipse. So everybody went crazy over the solar eclipse. There was all these conspiracy theories about how there was earthquakes and all of this craziness, and there was going to be an EMP and mass chaos was going to break out. Well, it's been kind of silent since that eclipse just a couple of days ago. And I held my opinion on this a little bit for a reason, because I don't know if I believed any of these things. Some people were saying that solar eclipses were fake and all this crazy stuff. But then I saw this article that came out, and it talks about, I believe it's a Swedish or German article, talks about a technology that could be utilized to create eclipses. That's interesting. It's called the ESA Proba 3, and it's a satellite, I guess two satellites, and we'll actually read more about this together, but two satellites that essentially can cause pseudo eclipses. Why would they want to do that? Guess what? We'll talk about it. So all of that and more, and if we have time, we'll see just how far we get into this and how deep we go, but we might have a little bit deeper, darker, conspiratorial thing to discuss just after that. So all of that and more. But the first thing I need you to do before we can dive deep into those conversations is hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star review. You know, and I know that you know that I know how much I appreciate you. I think there was something in there that was probably linguistically correct. So I appreciate you. Go ahead and hit that 5-star review button. It takes 10 seconds out of your day, and honestly, it means a lot to me. I read every single one of the reviews. Every time I see a new review, even if you don't write anything, it honestly makes this worth it to see that you guys appreciate it. So if you haven't yet, back out of this podcast while you're listening to it, hit the 5-star button. It takes 10 seconds out of your day, and it honestly means the world to me. I would appreciate it more than you know. And if you feel so inspired, write something down. Tell me what you love about it. Tell me what I should improve about it. Anything and everything you can think of, put it in there. Tell me your favorite, I don't know, your favorite chips and salsa brand company. I don't know. Maybe I need some good salsa brands. I don't know. Whatever the fuck, whatever you could think of, just throw it in there. Tell me what you love about the podcast, though, seriously. And leave a 5-star review. I would appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. And just to remind you, I am launching Ronin. Ronin's my Faraday Goods company. And we are going to have backpacks, baseball hats, beanies, phone sleeves, laptop sleeves, wallets, all of these things specifically to help you protect yourself from modern technology, whether it be EMF radiation, which Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has talked at length about, Andrew Huberman, all of those people, I've mentioned that before, whether it be stop people from swiping your credit card information from you, even when you didn't know it happened, with RFID blocking materials for wallets, or whether it's helping you shut off, shut down, and eliminate your digital footprint with our Faraday backpacks, which essentially block all inbound and outbound signals from your phone, from your laptop, stops the government, stops corporations from being able to track you, all of that nasty stuff that they're constantly doing. That is what I've been working on. That's why I've maybe had a few less podcasts more recently, is because I've been diving head first into creating the by far best Faraday Goods company in existence in the world today and for the future. So keep an eye out for that. The website, if you want to go check it out, there are some products listed right now. The wallets will actually be in next week. So if you want to go check those out and buy a Ronin wallet, again, RFID blocking, you can head to RoninBasics.com, RoninBasics, RoninBasics.com. And you can actually get a wallet that will be shipped to you like within a week. I'll get it to you. No big deal. Now, the rest of the stuff, I'm still working with the manufacturers and the suppliers and helping with the design and everything because I want to make sure that it's perfect for you. But the hat that I have in my head right now is a Ronin hat and just a couple more tweaks to go, and it will be chef's kiss. So keep an eye out for that. RoninBasics.com. All right, that's all I got for you. Let's go ahead and jump into it.
The Adams Archive.
I should have been a music producer in a past life, because I promise you, both of the intros that I've made, whether it was for Red Pill Revolution or for The Adams Archive, is kind of a banger. Kind of a banger. Should have been a music producer, but here I am, talking nonetheless. All right, let's go ahead and jump into it. The very first article that we're going to discuss, the very first conversation that we're going to have today, is about Julian Assange. Julian Assange, the leader and whistleblower who has unloaded a treasure trove of government and corporate corruption over years and years and years of WikiLeaks, has since fled the country, fleeing for his life, while the full force of the government, the FBI, the CIA, manhunt, going after this man. And he would be put away for life. But he's been finding himself in Australia, interesting enough, who has been sheltering him without extradition to the United States. And now Joe Biden is saying that he's considering dropping the prosecution against Julian Assange after a request from Australia. Now, this man should have been pardoned long ago. This man should have been pardoned by Trump. This man should have been pardoned by Obama, right? The list goes on. This man should have been pardoned long ago. There's no reason somebody, the only time, like the true case of authoritarianism is a government that cannot be questioned. And that's what Julian Assange did. He questioned the government. He questioned their intentions. And not only did he question them, but he exposed them for what they were. He exposed them for all of the corruption, all of the surveillance activities, everything that they were doing that was horrific. You know, you go to WikiLeaks.com or .org or something right now. I was actually looking at their archives today. There's an unbelievable list of all of these situations where the government was doing things that it shouldn't have done, from the Guantanamo Bay enhanced interrogation techniques, like so many of these things that were atrocious acts by our government that he exposed. Rightfully, you were doing illegal acts. You should be exposed for those illegal acts. This man exposed you for the illegal acts that you were committing, and now you want to go throw him in jail for committing for exposing you. That's authoritarianism. That's abuse. That's abusive behavior. That is the act of an abuser, right? So I would say this is the best thing that Joe Biden has considered. This is the best possible thing. If Joe Biden did this one thing, I would scream the praises of Joe Biden from a mountaintop for about 2 minutes. But nonetheless, I would still scream my praise from a mountaintop. And it would be that Joe Biden pardons Julian Assange. And so let's go ahead and read this article. It says U.S. President Joe Biden says the U.S. is considering dropping its prosecution, same thing, against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. For years, Australia has called on the U.S. to drop its prosecution against Assange, an Australian citizen who has fought U.S. extradition efforts from prison in the U.K., asked about the request on Wednesday as he hosted Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida for an official visit, Biden said. We're considering it. Interesting. Very interesting. Assange has been indicted on 17 espionage charges and one charge of computer misuse over his website's publication of a trove of classified U.S. documents almost 15 years ago. American prosecutors allege that Assange, 52, encouraged and helped U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning steal diplomatic cables and military files that WikiLeaks published, putting lives at risk. I want you to point me to one person who died within the government as a result of Julian Assange exposing the government and their corruption. Australia argues that there is a disconnect between the U.S. treatment of Assange and Manning. Then U.S. President Barack Obama commuted Manning's 35-year sentence to 7 years, which allowed her release in 2017. Assange's supporters say he is a journalist protected by the First Amendment, absolutely correct, who exposed U.S. military wrongdoing in Iraq and Afghanistan that was in the public interest. Correct. Assange's wife, Stella Assange, has said that WikiLeaks founder is being persecuted because he exposed the true cost of war in human lives. Absolutely correct. She has said that his health continues to deteriorate in prison and she fears he'll die behind bars. A British court ruled last month that Assange can't be extradited to the United States on espionage charges unless U.S. authorities guarantee he won't get the death penalty. Wow. The death penalty for telling the truth. What kind of world do we live in? That's so crazy that they would even consider that for exposing the truth, exposing corruption, exposing war crimes, exposing enhanced interrogation, right? So there you go. That would be amazing. That would be a great precedence to set. If you find corruption and you expose corruption, you should be celebrated, not given the death penalty. Very straightforward. So I hope that happens. I will be so excited to hear if that happens. Like I said, that is the one thing that Joe Biden could do that you would hear my praise about is pardon Julian Assange. Maybe Snowden too. Throw him on the list. Throw him on the list and then I'll be very happy. Right? So I hope to see it happen. I hope to see it happen soon. Joe Biden is leaving office, you know, somewhat in the near future. And that would be pretty incredible to see that man walks free. All right. Next situation. This is quite the segue. The godfather of AI warns us of battle robots. Now, when I think battle robots, I don't know if you remember this, but there used to be the BattleBots, I think, or BattleBots Arena or something like that, where all these kids would, like, I say kids, they were probably like 35-year-old nerds, awesome nerds, by the way, because the show was sweet. But they would create these little circular, like Roomba looking things, but they would throw razor blades on them and like little mini chainsaws and like little, I don't know, missiles or some shit. Like they would have saws on the side of them. And like it was the craziest game show ever, where they would literally physically fight these little tiny robots on remote controllers. I mean, essentially, they were like glorified little RC cars with knives, which I guess is pretty terrifying in itself. But that's what comes to mind when I think of this. I'm sure you remember that if you are over the age of, I don't know, 26, 27. I think it was even on like Nickelodeon or something at one point, like a Nick at Night. I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and watch some of those. Anyways, the technology is becoming more intelligent than people and could take over, Geoffrey Hinton says. The world could encounter major disasters before the use of artificial intelligent weapons is regulated in a proper manner, according to Turing Award-winning scientist Geoffrey Hinton, seen as a pioneer of the AI technology. The former Google engineer, who quit the company last year, compared the use of the technology for military purposes to chemical weapons deployment. And I'm going to go ahead and throw this article up for you here so you can follow along with me. And if you can't see it, that's because you're listening and not watching. And if you want to watch, you can head over to YouTube right now and type in the Adams Archive and you'll find me. Maybe not, because of all the platforms, for some reason, YouTube seems to hate me the most. But head over there. You can actually follow along in the articles as I'm scrolling through these and see them with your own eyes. But if you're driving, don't do that. Just keep listening to my silky smooth voice. The former Google engineer who quit the company last year compared the use of the technology for military purposes. I just read that to chemical weapons deployment, warning that very nasty things will occur before the global community arrives at a comprehensive agreement comparable to the Geneva Conventions. And I totally agree with that. I can absolutely see that happening. The threat I spoke about is the existential threat. Professor Hinton said on Tuesday in an interview with the Irish broadcaster RTE News, emphasizing that these things will get much more intelligent than us and they will take over. I'm going to read that again. The man who essentially is called the man called the godfather of AI just said that these things will get much more intelligent than us and they will take over. The computer scientist highlighted the impact of AI on disinformation and job displacement and also on weapons of the future. One of the threats is battle robots, which will make it much easier for rich countries to wage war on smaller, poorer countries, and they are going to be very nasty. And I think they are inevitably coming. And we see that kind of with the way that you see drone strikes. Like the drone strike thing has completely changed the war landscape that we've seen between the war in Ukraine, what we're seeing in Israel, like drones have changed the game. You can sit back in some hut somewhere or in some, you know, trailer in a military base and fly a plastic plane over somebody and then blow them up or kill them. Pretty wild stuff. So, yeah, if you think about how much that has changed warfare, now think about how sentient-ish AI robots armed with machine guns with immediate reaction times and unbelievable strength and perfect accuracy. Yeah, that's terrifying. One of the threats is battle robots. Just said that. He urged governments to put pressure on tech majors, especially in California, to conduct in-depth research on the safety of AI technology. Rather than it being an afterthought, there should be government incentives to ensure companies put a lot of work into safety, and some of that is happening now. The scientists also highlighted the huge benefits that AI can bring to humanity, particularly in healthcare, adding that he does not regret any of his contributions to the technology. Despite the mounting interest in AI, several high-profile figures, in the tech industry have warned about the potential dangers posed by the unregulated adoption of the technology. Hinton, who quit Google last year, has waged a media campaign to warn of the risks. Tesla CEO Elon Musk, Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, and Joshua Bengio, who is considered an AI pioneer for his work on neural networks, were among the top industry figures to co-sign a letter last year calling for aggressive regulation of the AI sector. Now I'll stop reading that to you and tell you this. AI battle robots could be a very bad thing for humanity, like probably humanity ending. Or it could also be very good for war. And by good for war, you know my stance on war by now. I think it's useless. But I also think that it will not go away. War is not going to go away. So to me, I had this thought the other day, and it was an interesting little rabbit hole I found myself down, where think about this. What if AI robots were now the only soldiers in major wars? If you think about it, if their reaction time is way better, if they're literally unkillable, if they are extremely strong compared to humans, they're way faster than us, their accuracy is perfect, they have AI algorithms telling them exactly when a threat goes to reach for anything at any time, they can kill you from like 2 miles away probably. Like it's just literally not going to be a fair fight. So during the time, maybe the near future, the nearish future, we're going to develop these weapons if we haven't already. And my hunch would be that we already have. But if we haven't developed this already, in the very near future, robots, AI, battle bots are essentially going to take over the battlefield. Now, if they do that, and we're in wars with other countries who have essentially replaced their entire fighting force with AI robots, then what if the war was entirely fought between robots? Because essentially what you're saying is establishing absolute dominance, because if our robots can kill your robots, then our robots could definitely kill all your people, right? There's no contest. There's no conversation, right? So if our robots just obliterate China's, then China knows that we could essentially just have our robots kill all of them instantaneously or something like that, like complete control, right? So what if wars were no longer fought with people? What if they were only fought with robots in a safe arena-esque type of situation? 10 on 10, let's say. 10 US robots versus 10 Chinese robots. And they just fight it out in an arena, because then we essentially know we don't need hundreds of thousands of these robots. But if we could just come to a gentleman's agreement that once the octagon shuts and the robots fire up their engines, and whoever is the last robot standing, that country wins the war. Because we already know the end result would be, if you take that to its furthest extent, that their technology is better. And as a result of your technology being better, you could essentially kill everybody within our country, or we could kill everybody within your country. Interesting thought experiment. And I kind of just want to see AI battlebot war arenas as a sport. Like betting and like drinking on the sidelines, two different jerseys, USA flags in the background, China with their, you know, little dinky Chinese flag, and you know, we're drinking beer and they're doing math equations on the sidelines. I don't know. However far you want to take that analogy, I think it's a cool one. I don't think it's the utopia that's going to come of this. But nonetheless, it's a fun thought experiment. But it does seem to make some rational sense that it could get to that point. There's a sci-fi book there you could write. But if you do, at least attribute me in your, you know, your acknowledgments. Anyways, that's the side tangent when it comes to AI battlebots. But that's terrifying. Robots could potentially kill us all. I don't know what I think is a bigger threat, whether it be AI or, you know, nuclear bombs. The problem with that scenario that I just gave you, though, is it's not going to be nearly equal, right? There's still countries who haven't figured out nuclear bombs, right? They don't have the nuclear stockpile that we or Russia or China does. And so if we send these battle bots into, I don't know, Afghanistan or a place where they don't exactly have that much technological advancements, it's just a bloodbath. It's not fair. It's just complete dominance and control. There's nothing you can do. Go watch Terminator. You know where it goes from there. Now, on a completely different note, going from non-sentient metal objects that are going to act sentient and have the possibility of, I don't know, murdering us all, there's also this flip side of things, maybe equally as terrifying, which is that I came across this article the other day that said that plants scream while they're being harvested, this new study finds. Now, there's something about scream and harvested in the same sentence that just doesn't quite sit right with me. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to go vegan, but I think you're giving some vegans some more ammunition. So let's go ahead and read this article. I actually came across this cool website, indie100.com. I find a bunch of different websites to source some of my news articles and try to do some research for you guys. And this one had some, it had like the top 100 articles and discussions that are being had. Seems like a cool way to kind of source some interesting material and find some conversations. So check it out, indie100.com. No association. Vegetarians, we're afraid. We've got some news. What? Vegetarians, we're afraid we've got some news that you're probably not going to like. Plants emit sounds akin to screams when they're distressed, according to a new study. I actually got it backwards in the way that I said that a little bit earlier. Yeah, I guess this is ammunition for carnivores, not vegans. Right? Plants emit screams when they're distressed, according to a new study. I have the most terrifying visual picture in my head right now of a little baby plant just screaming. They allegedly produce clicking noises that humans can't hear without the use of scientific equipment, research has found. The research, which was published in Cell back in 2023, showed that plants produce these noises in times of acute distress. Lilac Hadany is an evolutionary biologist at Tel Aviv University. Hadany said, "Even in a quiet field, there are actually sounds that we don't hear, and those sounds carry information. There are animals that can hear these sounds, so there is the possibility that a lot of acoustic interaction is occurring. Plants interact with insects and other animals all the time, and many of these organisms use sound for communication. So it would be very suboptimal for plants not to use sound at all." That makes sense. The findings show that plants which are distressed have incredibly high-pitched popping noises, while unstressed plants do not emit these noises. The study's definition of distressed includes plants that were having their stems cut or were dehydrated. Wow. However, it's not yet clear how the plants produce the noises. Now that we know that plants do emit sounds, the next question is, who might be listening? We are currently investigating the responses of other organisms, both plants and animals, to these sounds, and we're also exploring our ability to identify and interpret the sounds in completely natural environments. Comes after a new study suggests that Western industrial diets may be changing the ways that humans digest plants. As modern diets lack fiber, the way our bodies break down cellulose found in fruits and vegetables is changing. All right. So, that's a terrifying mental image, and now I feel a little bad for, you know, all the weeds that I ripped out of the concrete when I was in the military. Anyways, yeah. So now when a vegan comes to you and says, "Oh, you're hurting those animals." Well, just let them know that plants scream when they eat them. Literally, according to this study. I don't really know where to take this from here. It just seemed pretty terrifying. And I had a lot of weird mental images of plants screaming while somebody was eating one of them. Anyways, really not a ton of places to go from there, but I'm just letting you know. It's more of an FYI than a discussion piece. Now, what is a discussion piece is the fact that Alex Jones has now come out and said that he's going to be pursuing a lawsuit against the FBI and the CIA for conducting essentially a hit job on him, including the $1 billion settlement that he was forced to make. Now, it says that, let's go ahead and see which one we should start with. All right, it says that Alex Jones joined Louder with Crowder Wednesday to discuss the massive expose by Sound Investigations, showing a CIA operator or CIA operative's admission that the FBI and CIA vindictively targeted Jones for destruction. Jones explained the footage could significantly bolster a free speech lawsuit against the federal agencies for a violation of his civil rights, with which he's hoping tech entrepreneur Elon Musk could assist, since the law firms coming after Jones are the same coming after Musk. Now, I do want to look a little bit into the Sound Investigations because it is very, very Project Veritas-esque. So let's go ahead And we'll take a look at them in just a minute. But this is from Sound Investigations. If you go to Twitter, it's Sound, I-N-V-E-S-T-I-G is their handle. So Sound Investig. It says, breaking, CIA officer, former FBI, Bose can put anyone in jail. Set him up. We call it a nudge. FBI did what we wanted with Alex Jones. Took his money away. Chopped his legs off. Estimates 20 undercover FBI agents at January 6th. Works with some of them now at the CIA. Whoa. Let's watch this video.
You can kind of put anyone in jail if you know what to do.
How?
You set them up.
Does the Bureau practice entrapment a lot?
We get really close. We call it a nudge.
A nudge.
A nudge. Sometimes you just gotta give them a quick little just to see what happens. Sometimes you light the fuse and just wait for it to follow.
Sometimes you just gotta give them a quick little just to see what happens.
We're putting out a fake social media thing to like really get people mad.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
You are?
He did what we wanted.
Which was what?
Took his money away, chopped his legs off.
Took his money away, chopped
Gavin
his
O'Blenis
legs
off. Gavin
O'Blenis
is a contracting officer at the CIA. O'Blenis worked for the FBI in 2021 and 2022 in the San Diego office, moved on to Homeland Security where he conducted asylum interviews at the southern border, and now works for the CIA managing multi-million dollar contracts across government agencies and private sector vendors.
I work for, I'm not supposed to tell people kind of job. If I say intelligence, what do you think?
CIA?
Yep.
Oh, you work for the CIA?
I do.
That's
that is the worst CIA officer ever. So I work in a field where you're like not really supposed to tell people what you do. But when I say intelligence, you say Central Intelligence Agency? Yeah. Like, wow, you're a tough cookie to crack. That is the nation's best, my friend. Let's listen to that one more time because that was amazing.
Sector vendors.
I work for, I'm not supposed to tell people kind of job.
You're not supposed to tell
say
people kind of job.
What do you think?
CIA?
Yep.
You work for
yep.
CIA?
That's me. That's I do work for the
contracting officer.
Amazing.
So I deal a lot with like different agencies. We're contracting with like Director of National Intelligence to do stuff. We do Navy, Army, any of them really. I just FBI. I used to work for the FBI, so
really?
They threw the FBI at me. They're like, here, you used to work there. Oh, I'm permanent. I'm staff. Yeah.
Good. Well, why do they call it contracting?
Because I do the contracting for them. I do all the legal contracts. I fly out to vendors and evaluate them. I love the agency.
Good for you.
I like the Bureau, too. The Bureau was a lot of fun. I got to do a lot of cool stuff with the Bureau. I was the guy in the back of the truck in the van.
O'Blenis spoke to an undercover Sound Investigations reporter about his work experience involving near entrapment and his employer's involvement with political commentator Alex Jones's legal battles.
As long as the Bureau is able to progress far enough to be able to put pro-lifers in jail whenever they want.
Yeah.
You think that's on the agenda?
We can. You can kind of put anyone in jail if you know what to do.
How?
You set them up. You create the situation to where they have no choice but to act on their impulse. And once they act on that impulse, then we call that entrapment. It's a fine line.
Does the Bureau practice entrapment a lot?
We get really close.
Not officially?
No. We get as close as we can. We get as close as we can to it without doing it.
So they can entrap some of these pro-lifers into doing things that they
depending,
don't...
Yeah. We call it a nudge.
A nudge.
We call it a nudge.
Sometimes you just gotta give them a quick little, just to see what happens, right?
And how does that happen?
You put a post out there, or you have someone fake profile say something that triggers, that we know is gonna trigger them, right? Like, we already know your history. If we're to that point, we already know everything about it. So we're like, oh, this will piss them off. Sometimes you light the fuse and just wait for it to follow. Right.
Like a railing, like a, oh. So when a railing happens, that sometimes the Bureau behind it?
Yeah, sometimes.
Nothing like putting on a fake social media thing to like really get people mad.
Mm-hmm.
Post fake news. Sometimes it's not fake. It's embellished a little bit.
Who would be like a...
So that's interesting. So he's saying essentially that they would put out social media posts to try to get certain individuals to bite on it. I'm not sure how you could put somebody in jail for a reaction to a social media post. Not sure what he would be alluding to there. But the fact that a CIA intelligence contracting officer just stated basically publicly and without any friction that the CIA conducts nudges or entrapment campaigns around people they disagree with the ideologies of, that's pretty concerning.
Big influence that you're influencer that you're after, you're like a, I don't know, like I don't even know these names, like a Fox News person or like a Tucker Carlson or like
I'm sure he's a right. You always want the biggest and loudest, like that. What was his name? The one that said the San Diego didn't happen.
Alex Jones.
Yeah. So we were after him.
You are? Are you still after him?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's broke. He got found guilty. Mm-hmm. And had to pay like $100 million.
So what? Why were you after him?
We're not anymore.
Just to get the money from him?
Yeah.
Was that court case used? Was that a CIA?
Sure was.
That was the agency thing?
Well, actually it was a defamation case. Mm. So it's a civil, not government. But we were looking at all of his followers, commenting, following, like, who's that gonna be this time? Right? So even though it's technically not our, well, not the agency, definitely, but the Bureau, for instance. Yeah, that's not our purview. It's a civil matter. But since they got all this access to his stuff, and it's there, what can we go find?
And did you find it?
I can't tell you.
Oh,
we did. But, so, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, realize the opportunity that you have.
So with Alex Jones...
So he's essentially saying that during the civil case, they got access to all of his documentation over the Sandy Hook allegations. And I'm sure you can't point to one thing Alex Jones said that pissed off the CIA. It was probably a lot of things. But within that list of things was obviously the ability to find the silliest potential civil legal case to completely bankrupt a man who was just doing his job in trying to expose potential corruption and mass weaponization of proven tactics that have been absolutely leveraged and at least proposed to be leveraged, right? If you go back to Operation Northwoods with the CIA, they proposed, and it went all the way up to the president, to conduct fake mass shootings, one literally on a military base. And they were actually going to pay people to conduct it, right? So not faking a mass shooting. That's far more difficult than actually doing the mass shooting, right? When you looked at the situation in Russia, what happened? They found people who were broke, right? And maybe this was, maybe it wasn't the CIA, but maybe it was the CIA, who has a track record of potentially finding people who are in a position that they can then bribe to do an act that would be in line with what they would want to see happen, to cause something that they want to cause. And then they find them on Telegram, and then they convince them to do the thing through words and money and enablement, right? Just a little nudge, just a little nudge, right? So in the case of Sandy Hook, right? The dumbest thing they could have done, the dumbest thing anybody could have done, was try to fake it like a movie, right? That's just, there's so many loose ends. It's far easier to convince somebody who's already on a bunch of psychological medications, who's already, you know, maybe having some sort of mental breakdown, who's already talking about it on forums, to just, yeah, what if this did happen? What if this showed up at your house tomorrow? What if I gave you plans to conduct that, right? Like, there's a lot of ways to do it without creating a Hollywood movie scene, right? This isn't the moon landing, right? So this man is literally admitting here that what they did was they weaponized the government, right? Weaponized the CIA, weaponized the FBI, weaponized the judicial system in order to gain insight, dirt, and then go after Alex Jones. cut him off at the legs, which means the judge who conducted it, the prosecutors, all of that should be appealed at this point with this new evidence.
Mm-hmm. You were watching him long before anything ended up happening.
Probably. It wasn't my office, but I mean, we would have been well aware of what he was doing.
And the goal with him was what? Just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much. And we let the families do it.
And what?
We let the families do it.
Were they encouraged to do that by the Bureau? Like, nudged?
We don't encourage people.
But, like,
we just say there's no federal statute being broken. But you do have the option for a civil case. And it's a pretty good case.
Nice.
In our opinion.
So, that makes so much sense. I have a cousin who's a lawyer. So that's a lot of these cases. They're kind of encouraged by the FBI.
Yeah, like there's nothing federal law we can.
Interesting. Let's see. I'm just going to kind of scrub through here so I'm not making you listen to this loud background restaurant. But let's see if there's anything better. Oh, here we go. January 6th, and then we'll move on. All right, here we go. Maybe it won't. It essentially says, how many people do you think the FBI or the CIA had in the crowd? And he said, I'm talking they maybe had 20. You needed 1,000 to get rid of that crowd. That's where we're stuck on here. So there you go. That's the situation. Now, Alex Jones responds to this on Louder with Crowder and discusses this at length in an interview.
Let me ask you this, though. You do have a lawsuit planned yourself.
Yes.
Can you explain that to people so they understand what it is that you're...
Yes. And Stephen, I apologize for going on and on, but I can let me finish that last
one. Go ahead.
I'll get into that. My point is Justice Department, IRS, law firms, rigged courts, who are not allowed to defend yourself. This is the cocktail they've used against Trump. It's the cocktail that they're now using against everybody. And absolutely, the only reason I want to sue them is to get my name back. I don't even want money, but I want to be able to call Oblevis in. I want to be able to call their other lawyers in. I want to be able to call in the PR firms because the mistake they made was run their mouth. I mean, the lawyers in Connecticut and Texas, and by the way, the Texas group's the same one suing Elon Musk, by the way, they got up at the courthouse steps when they won their cases. The judge had already found me guilty and then told the jury to find me guilty for a bunch of money. They said, our mission is to silence him. We don't want money. And that's now happening in the bankruptcy court where the judge is like, wait, the law says you can get money, but the law doesn't say you get to silence people. And so basically there's now findings about to be made public that they're dealing in bad faith. So that's some inside baseball. But yes, I've talked to several different civil rights law firms, and I've had four conversations with four law firms since this just broke. Well, I was talking to him before it broke. So in the last week, they just broke a day and a half ago. Seems like a million years ago now. And so it's a big deal. You know, it's all God.
Yeah.
You know, opening up the mouths of these evil people to then expose themselves. The Bible says the pit they dig for you is the pit they will fall into. And so absolutely, I don't like taking on the FBI and the CIA. But if somebody's on top of you, breaking your nose and punching your eyeballs out and gang raping you and running over you and backing over you, all you can do is fight back. That's why when I saw the targeting of you a few years ago, I called you. We're already friends then. And I said, listen, don't let it get to you. This is you're successful. You're one of the top talk show hosts. You're a populist. People love you. Do not, and I know you're smart, but you haven't been through a lot of this yet. You've been through some stuff. I said, I know the cut of this jib. I know the signature. This is 100% the Justice Department, the CIA. They create the narrative. They look at things. They go, we'll take this and we'll take that. And we'll make Alex Jones a guy that bullies kids and pees on graves.
Exactly.
And then we'll make Steven Crowder this guy that, you know, literally breaks women's necks and human sacrifices them. And it's just all made up. And then they just hype it and hype
now
it
and then.
To take what you're known for, being smart and being funny.
All right. So there you go. That's his response. He's essentially going to go after the FBI and the CIA for conducting this, this nudge operation. Right. Now, again, I think that was pretty good work. Like, I think that's some of the better investigative journalism that's come out more recently, even above what OMG's doing, what I've seen more recently from James O'Keefe, which is, you know, OMG Media. Project Veritas is essentially dead in the water. I haven't seen a single Project Veritas thing come out in probably a year since they got rid of him. But let's look. I just want to look at the Sound Investigations Twitter account. Hopefully they're only 23,000 followers investigating corruption in adult industries and more. Wow. And since they posted that, that has 6 million views on Twitter. Very interesting. And look, they have more posts. They posted about the Pornhub C-suite executive. Very interesting. Okay, cool. Sound Investigations. Good job. Good on James O'Keefe for encouraging people to start doing this, right? That's real journalism. Absolutely incredible. Okay, let's touch on this. But before we do that, I just want to remind you that you're still here listening to me. And if you haven't left a 5-star review, I'm watching you. Not really. Not like the CIA. But I do feel your presence right now. And if you haven't done it yet, I know you want to. Just do it. Just tippity tap that button. And I also know you want to head over to RonanBasics.com and check out the website. It's still a little bit of a work in progress. Most of the things are still on back order, but at least you'll be familiar. RonanBasics.com. And I'll let you in on a little clue. Something I'm pretty excited about is that every single one of the products that I sell will come with it, in some way, shape, or form, a QR code. And on that QR code, it can lead you to become a Ronin affiliate, where you can make a percentage of every person that you help protect themselves from modern technology. So just by buying one of my products, you'll get a QR code that will be sent to you, and you will make a percentage of every single sale that is ever made by anybody you encourage to do so. So you can even make some money. Think about that. High quality products, protect yourself from EMF radiation, get rid of corporate and government tracking. How could this get better, you ask? Well, what if you made money off of it? What if you did that? That'd be pretty cool, huh? So RonanBasics.com, and this will start, again, the thing that I will have go live that will no longer be on back order or presale is going to be the wallets. All right. Pretty awesome designs. They look super sharp, very high quality materials. RonanBasics.com. Check out the wallets that are there and make your order today. And I can start shipping it out as early as late next week. And I will include with that a QR code for you to share the love with all of your friends and family. All right. RonanBasics.com. Head there right now. U.S. company hoping to bring back dead, extinct animals. This article says U.S. company hoping to bring back the dodo and the mammoth. But here's why it won't be like Jurassic Park. I like how they're already going on a PR campaign. But here's why it's not going to turn into velociraptors tearing you and your children to shreds. Here's why. Let me explain. My name is James Robinson, news reporter for SkyNews.com. Let me tell you why this is a great thing for humanity, that we're going to bring back woolly mammoths and also saber-toothed tigers and also maybe velociraptors. Give me 5 minutes of your time and I shall convince you, sir, that bringing back extinct animals that the world no longer was able to need or was able to sustain at sizes much larger than animals that we have today in an environment that is constantly surrounded by humans that are not like they were before. Let me tell you why introducing extinct animals back into the ecosystem is a great thing. Okay, I'm listening, James. Tell me. Well, the idea of scientists bringing prehistoric creatures back to life with some clever DNA trickery might sound familiar to fans of the 1993 Hollywood blockbuster Jurassic Park. Yes, it does. But for Colossal Biosciences, a company that hopes to reintroduce extinct species such as the dodo and the mammoth, I like how they find like the most cuddly little stupid things that they could come up with. Right? We're not going to do those big scary animals. Right? We're not going to weaponize Tyrannosaurus Rexes. Right? We're just a little dodo. They're stupid and harmless. That's all. Maybe a little woolly mammoth so you can give it a little belly rub. But not velociraptors. We would never do that. We would never. We would never. That's a terrible idea. We would never do that, guys. We would never start an island for rich people to go hunt velociraptors, to pay us millions of dollars, to go start our own Jurassic Park Island where you could view velociraptors, T-Rexes, bronchiosauruses, triceratops, and all of your childhood dreams come true? We would never do that and monetize it for our benefit. Just dodos and little belly rubs for the woolly mammoths. That's all we want to do, guys. Don't worry about us. Just dodos. They were stupid to begin with. We'll start there. But for it says it is more than just a film script. It's a reality, and one that could be just years away. We've got all the technology we need, says Ben Lamb, chief executive of the firm based in Dallas, Texas. It's just a focus of time and funding. And we are 100% confident we can bring back the Tasmanian tiger, the dodo, the mammoth. The science behind the project is simple. Work out the genes that make an extinct animal what it is, and then replicate those genes using the DNA of a close existing relative. Right? We're not God. We're just creating animals out of thin air with our bare hands, creating life, the very existence. And maybe, just maybe, we may alter a thing or two there. Maybe make a purple woolly mammoth because people love purple. Right? But we would never, not the big scary stuff, guys. Don't worry about that. We would never do that. It's almost reverse Jurassic Park, says Mr. Lamb. Right? In the film, they were filling in the holes in the dinosaur DNA with frog DNA. We are leveraging artificial intelligence and tools to identify the core genes that make a mammoth, and then engineering them into elephant genomes. Right? We're not filling in the DNA with frog DNA. That's such a huge part of this. And all of the concerns have to do with the frog DNA. So we're not going to do that. Wow. That is the technical part. But there are some other practical hurdles for Colossal to overcome. Namely, once you have a mammoth cells, do you birth a real-life mammoth? The answer, according to Colossal, is in the womb of an Asian elephant. But it is a process that could take nearly 2 years, even after they've worked out how to do it. Each of the different projects have different challenges. The mammoth is really around gestation, which is around 22 months. The dodo gestations, it's pretty great, they said. We are using surrogate chickens. The hardest part is cultivating the primordial germ cells. So after about 4,000 years of extinction, when could we see the return of the mighty mammoth, a creature that fell victim to human hunting? This is our fault, guys. Let's bring them back. In the changing conditions brought about by the end of the last ice age, we are well into the editing phase, said Mr. Lamb. We don't have mammoths yet, but we still feel very good about 2028. Jeez. Away from the lab, led by Irona Hisoli, Colossal's head of biological sciences, there are a few issues to overcome, including where the newly returned species will live once they're born. Mr. Lamb said, who the fuck gives you the right, Mr. Lamb? Who gave you the right to do this? How do you say, oh, I'm going to be the guy to challenge nature? To say, hey, I know this happened in the past in history, but guess what? Not on my watch. My name's Mr. Lamb. I'm going to reverse engineer the cells and become God and start to create animals that haven't been around for thousands of years without any regard to how this will affect our ecosystem, without any regard to what the actual predatory aspects of this might look like, without any concern for anything other than this shit looks pretty cool. Maybe I'll do that. Right? How is there not? And also, by the way, what stops them from doing this with Neanderthals? There's a weird situation. Oh, no. All you need is a surrogate mom, and we have Neanderthals back. Isn't there, like, little people, too? Like, I remember I went to the museum. I think it was in San Diego. Some museum that I was at. And they had a literal, like, little person dwarf that was another Homo sapien-esque type of figure. What's to stop them from doing this with that? Are we going to bring back Neanderthals and dwarf, Homo sapien-esque creatures and just see how that works out for us? I could just see it. Let's go into a new scenario. We went from BattleBots to Neanderthals being regenerated into life. Maybe let's cross them both together. The BattleBots, and the only way to combat that is to bring back to life the strong, the eyebrow having Neanderthals, right? We were the reason they're gone anyways. Just bring them back. They're going to back us up, right? If all hell breaks loose with the AI robots, let's just further experiment with us being God. You know, discount the metal God that we're creating. And let's just say, hey, we're going to bring back the Neanderthals to fight off the AI robot battle bots. Maybe that's the end result, right? But literally, do you think they're going to stop at mammoths? Do you think they're going to stop at dodos or whatever they said, whatever the other one was? No, they're going to do everything and anything they can, which includes dinosaurs, includes other Homo sapien-esque creatures like the Neanderthals, right? That is going to happen. If we are going down this road, we are opening up Pandora's box, where these scientists are acting as if they are gods, where they believe they can do whatever they want without repercussions, without government oversight, because they're moving fast enough now to where we can't, as humans, be able to take in the information and what they're doing and have corrective measures and guidelines for them to follow, which says, hey, maybe it's not a good idea to reintroduce predatory species into our current state ecosystem that haven't been around for thousands of years. Maybe that's not a good idea. Maybe it's not a good idea to create a hyper-intelligent metal figure that could break every bone in your body and has no emotions. Maybe not. You know, but where do we start to draw the line, right? If it's not hyper-intelligent, godlike metal creatures, and it's not bringing back extinct creatures and developing animals from scratch and changing their genetic makeups with the metal god filling in the blanks, right? There's so many sci-fi books that I could create out of this. It's ridiculous. And most of them, if not all of them, end terribly for us, right? We better hope the aliens show up and save our asses from these dumbass scientists trying to extinct humanity while bringing back dodos and creating metal gods like AI battle bots. Jeez. Our ultimate goal is to put all the animals we make back into the wild, he says. New tools in the fight to protect nature. Colossal thinks the work is not just about rewilding animals previously lost to the world. The company is currently working with Dr. Paul Ling at Baylor College of Medicine to create a vaccine to eradicate the deadly EEHV virus, which kills about 20% of baby elephants. It is also working closely with the University of Alaska and the University of Stockholm on radiocarbon dating of American mammoths, as well as sequencing their genome, the largest study of its type ever undertaken. Now, what's interesting about this is that guess what they're getting to help convince you in their propaganda campaign that this is a good thing? They hired the guy. There's a very famous documentarian named James Reed. You probably heard that name before. And if you hadn't, go look up his IMDb and you'll probably be pretty familiar with it. You know, the documentary that was very, very famous recently, the My Octopus Teacher, is now been commissioned to create a docu-series about this medical technology company, the new Jurassic Park. It says the company has teamed up with Oscar-winning My Octopus Teacher James Reed's Underdog Films and Teton Ridge Entertainment to produce a multi-year docu-series about Colossal's work. The firm bills itself as the world's first de-extinction company and has raised some $225 million in funding as it works to resurrect species like the woolly mammoth and the dodo. The announcement of the docuseries comes on the heels of Colossal hiring former legendary entertainment executive Emily Castell as chief marketing officer. Among other duties, Castell will help guide the company on its foray into the entertainment world. Teton Ridge Entertainment will finance the first phase of production with the intent of finding a distribution partner. Coming to a Netflix near you, the real Jurassic Park. I like how every time they mention this, they also mention dodos and woolly mammoths. Like, I guarantee you that marketing executive, CMO, probably did a huge survey market analysis where they tried to figure out what are the least intimidating things that we could run our campaign on to not immediately sound the public alarms around us playing God. And that just so happens to be the woolly mammoth and the dodo, right? Transparency is core to Colossal's missions and goals. Of course it is. So working with the right filmmakers to chronicle our journey, it was incredibly important, right? So this is just a big propaganda campaign, huge money budget, big propaganda campaign to convince you that this is a good idea and we shouldn't be sounding the alarms over this unbelievable decision and acceptance among our government to allow this to happen. Okay. Now, the last topic that we're going to discuss today is going to be that everybody was talking about this week about the solar eclipse, right? There was all these conspiracy theories about the solar eclipse, right? It's going to be the end of times. It's going to cause all these earthquakes. All of the technology is going to go out. There's going to be this. There's going to be that. There was all these conspiracy theories. And I didn't come out and say much about it at all. One, because I was too busy building Ronin and had my head buried in the sand to sit and create content about it. But two, I didn't really see the correlation, right? I know there's a huge buildup and it's in the air. Something's going to happen very shortly, very soon. I don't disagree with you. and side note, I listened to a podcast between Theo Vaughn's podcast this past weekend where he interviewed Tucker Carlson. Probably one of my favorite podcasts I've listened to in a very, very long time. And Tucker Carlson sounds the alarm. It's the third time I've said that in like three paragraphs. But it really does sound the alarm bells around the potential for mass EMPs causing mass chaos by a external enemy. And there's some really sobering thoughts and ideas around get a plan in place, because when all hell breaks loose and you can't call your mom, you can't call your dad, you can't get a hold of your kids, you can't get a hold of your brother, your sister, your mother, your best friend, what are you going to do? Do you have a plan in place? Do you have a place to meet up? Do you know where to source your water from? Do you know how to get out of the city properly? Do you know where to go hide in the woods? Do you know those things? Because if you don't, and I certainly need to put together this plan as well, but you should have a plan. You should have some food storage. You should have a way to filter your water. You should have some of those things, right? Go listen to that podcast. Really, really well done. But anyways, all of these conspiracy theories around what's going to happen after the eclipse. Now, being somewhat interested in astronomy and the cosmos and everything that's going on in the larger universe around us, this eclipse is pretty cool to me. I like looking up and seeing that and kind of being able to feel extremely small in this mathematical equation that is reality going on around us. And I appreciate being able to witness that. And I think it's pretty damn cool. People that shit on the eclipse are the same people that shit on New Year's resolutions. Like, you're just lame. So I wrote off all these conspiracy theories and I didn't find any of them interesting. I didn't see any one of them that convinced me there was going to be something that went down. But what I did see after the fact, is this article. And I saw a video about it that was pretty well done. And it explains how the eclipse could have potentially been artificially created. And that sounds crazy, but let me tell you how. This article comes from the European Space Agency, and it says, face to face with sun eclipsing Proba 3. There is a satellite technology rotating around the Earth right now that has the capability to cause a pseudo solar eclipse. This is real technology. It's online. Look it up. The article is face to face with sun eclipsing Proba-3. And here's what it says. It says, through exquisite millimeter scale formation flying, the dual satellite making up ESA's Proba-3 will accomplish what was previously a space mission impossible. Cast a precisely held shadow from one platform to the other in the process of blocking out the fiery sun to observe its ghostly surrounding atmosphere on a prolonged basis. Now, this should be fairly easy and simplistic to go back and see if prior to this thing being created, was there a projected solar eclipse? It's just a mathematical equation, right? I'm sure somebody way smarter than me knows how to calculate it, but this should be able to be validated. I haven't done that math myself because it would take me 20 years of learning math and, you know, maybe getting Neuralink in the process to help me understand it. But there's probably a way to validate this. So I just haven't gotten that far. But there are some interesting names for these things. One of them is called the Occulter spacecraft because there's two satellites that make this up. And it says, ahead of the probe pair launching together later this year, the scientists who will make use of Prober 3 observations were able to see the satellites with their own eyes. Members of this team will test hardware developed for the mission during an actual terrestrial solar eclipse over North America next April. Dun, dun, dun. The two satellites are currently undergoing final integration in the premises of Red Wire near Antwerp in Belgium. They are paid a visit by Proba 3 science working team, a 45-strong group of solar physicists coming from all over Europe and the wider world. Many of these experts are regular visitors to terrestrial solar eclipse around the globe, but looking forward to the new perspective Proba 3 will open up on the faint solar corona. This mysterious region is important as the place where coronal mass ejections are created, vast eruptions of charged particles that trigger solar storms, as well as influencing the velocity of the solar wind, which is central to determining space weather. The satellite hardware was quite something to in close up. I was particularly struck by how close the camera head on the coronagraph spacecraft is to the solar array. So those are the two names of it, coronagraph, and the other satellite's name is Occulter. While the array relies on high solar illumination, the camera has to remain in complete darkness with no stray light whatsoever. It really brings it home how precisely that small shadow cast by the Occulter will need to be maintained in place. We also got to peek at the carefully machined edge of the Occulter spacecraft's disk, normally kept under protective cover before launch. Interesting. Now, this is pretty long. Let's see if we can find out and explain how it exactly does what it's supposed to do. So it says there are telescopes that incorporate internal occulting disks to obscure the solar disk. The problem is that these internal occulters still experience light spilling around their edges, known as diffraction, blotting out the extremely faint signals of interest. Right. So it looks like one satellite in front of the other, both positioning itself in front of the sun and creating this pseudo eclipse, right? An artificial eclipse, it says. It says Damian Galeno, ESA's Proba 3 project manager, notes the best way to reduce diffraction is to increase the distance between the occulter and the chronograph, which is precisely what Proba 3 is going to do. Interesting. By definition, full-scale end-to-end testing of Proba 3 is impossible here on Earth, but the meeting here heard how the same set of filter wheels developed by Proba 3 will be used to observe the solar eclipse over North America on the 8th of April, 2024, along the liquid parallel crystal imaging technology. The filter wheels allow observation of the corona in different polarization angles, like switching between different polarized glasses. The nice about observing during an actual eclipse is we won't need any occulter to gain insight of exactly the kind of results we're going to get back from Proba 3. Now, why would they want to do this? Right? Why would they want to cause a solar eclipse? It says, assuming the sun's output influences Earth's climate, it's important to measure any variations we precisely can. Proba 3 is due for launch this autumn. Like, what's the purpose of this? Why are you doing that? Why do you want to? And here's an actual good explanation as to what it's doing and how it's doing it. And so you can go check that out. Look up the article name. But the last thing I'll show you is a video here. This is a 2.5-3 minute video that explains, hopefully, verbally, what's going on. If it doesn't, I'll read you what it's saying. It says Proba 3, an ESA mission for precise formation, flying demonstration, and sun.
Proba 3 is the mission that we're developing for the European Space Agency, and we have two main objectives. The first one being the demonstration of formation flying technologies, and the second one is to allow for the observation of the inner solar corona. Proba 3 consists of two spacecraft. One of them has a telescope which is pointing towards the sun, and the other carries an occulting disk. What we do with the formation flying is to position the disc in front of the telescope such that the solar disc is occulted from the point of view of the telescope, and it allows to see exclusively the much fainter solar corona. Besides that, one of the main challenges is the accuracy with which we want to achieve the formation. Positions need to have an accuracy of a couple of millimeters and pointings of a thousandth of a degree, and all of that while both spacecraft are flying at speeds between 1 and 10 kilometers per second. The last challenge would be the autonomy with which we want to achieve that. Each spacecraft is an...
Basically, it sends some instruction for the next 7 days, and from that point onwards, spacecraft work on their own. This has required the development of some specific technologies to make up all the spacecraft to communicate each other, synchronize and cooperate, not only under...
In GNC and attitude control systems and information flying.
Anyways, we're not going to listen to that whole thing. It's amazing how proud these people are of themselves just randomly doing stuff for no seeming purpose, without any understanding of what the actual implications are of their actions. Seems to be quite the theme with science today, is like everybody's a mad scientist in these situations, right? The mad scientist like trope essentially is playing out right before us right now in so many instances. And, you know, between nuclear bombs and AI battle bots and resurrecting extinct species. Gosh. And pseudo artificial solar eclipses. Like, again, why would they want to do that? What's the purpose of that? What's the value of this? Why would you want to do that? It's crazy. It's crazy. But guess what? The world's crazy. And everybody's gone mad. And last but not least, you know, like I said before, make sure you have your I'm not correlating it to this. This is just weird to me. I'm not sure why they would want to do this. They don't seem to explain why they would want to do this, but they can do it. So when people are saying, oh, it's an artificial solar eclipse, or oh, it was fake, or oh, this, oh, that. Yeah, you sound silly. But then you actually find something like this and you're like, that's interesting. If nothing else, it's interesting, right? All right. That's all I got for you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you from the bottom of my heart, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Adam's Archive.